the film deserves an Oscar for real. I don't know what is out there, but, you know, it really does. I hope that the film goes beyond and people understand and we can do some work, you know, people as a people, as leaders of the world. Like, I pray that people watch it, and because it's really about all humanity story. Mm-hmm. I was trying to get the construct that I found out from his podcast. It was back to what I was talking about, Jon Stewart. And Jon Stewart, I was like, oh, why'd they go back to the white guy? You know what I mean? And then I was like, moral licensing. I knew the concept in my head, but I didn't remember the name of the concept. And I was looking it up and talking to you at the same time. It's a lot, but it was in my head and I needed to remember the term. But moral licensing is basically where what happened with Obama. Like, so the country was just thinking, okay, we've never had a black guy. He's kind of credible. Let's see. And they're like, okay, we've had the black guy now. Let's go all the way back to the other end. And then they had Trump. Mm. You see what I mean? So it's basically like justifying that, oh, you did this one good thing. And then it's justifying going back to the way all the things used to be because you did this one good thing. Like, oh, yeah, we gave black people a bone but one time. We're not doing it again, though. You know what I mean? That's basically what it is. So it was a term that I learned from his podcast, Revisionist History. It's a really good podcast. But I was saying it's the same thing with the Jon Stewart thing. I was like, they gave it to the black dude. And then they're like, we're going back to Jon. Instead of giving it to any one of the other people that are a woman, even would have been nice, because there's not a lot of women doing late night shows, leading late night shows, you know. Samantha Bee was like the only one, and they canceled her show. They're always canceling the female late night shows. But anyway, I think we should finish our Back to the Future stuff. That's what I was trying to get back to. We've never finished this. Like, I want to see all three. I don't think I've seen all three. So
I did one and two, and I don't think I ever did two. But I didn't. I haven't done three.
Me.
I'm sorry. What's up, you guys?
I'm upset. I'm upset.
I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. Hey, everybody. So, just so you guys can scold Whitney, me and her were like going. We were just talking about old films and things we used to love, like the rom coms and things from the 90s, 80s, early 2000s, all that, and how nowadays there aren't any good, like.
There aren't like traditional rom-coms
and people don't like to watch them.
Seattle, one of my personal favorites, You've Got Mail. I love that movie so much.
Right. So we were talking about how we were watching Back to the Future together because I had never seen them. And I've seen clips and my sister was like, we watched them when we were young. And I'm like, I don't have any recollection of the stories. So she was like, I was like, maybe you watched them and I went to do something else. Because I don't remember. I know the movies, but I was like, I don't remember the storyline. And she's right. I mean, no, she wasn't right. I was right. I never saw them. Especially the first one. I didn't know anything about the first one. So we were watching it together. And I was like, yeah, let's continue together. But then she went on and watched two without me, y'all.
I mean, I've seen them all before. Wait, you know what? I don't think I had seen two before.
You saw three as well?
Yeah. That's the thing. It's so weird. You know how, like, network TV used to be. There would always be certain movies that were always on TV. And for whatever reason, I had seen the first one multiple times. I'd seen the third one less frequently, but for whatever reason, I don't think I had ever seen the second one.
I don't know what the second one's about. Okay, so now I'm going to go on Freevee and find it and watch it by myself. But okay, whatever.
I'm sorry.
Anyway, but hey, everybody, what's up? It's the month of Black Power and Love.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Black History Month. Mm-hmm. It's Valentine's Month, really. Even though it's just a day that's going to happen by the time this... It probably has already happened by the time you hear this.
Yeah. It would have been yesterday.
Yes, exactly. So, happy Valentine's Day in advance to everybody. Happy Valentine's...
Hope you had a great Valentine's Day.
Hope you had a great Valentine's Day, everyone.
Also, wibbly wobbly timey wimey, to use a Doctor Who term.
Right. I don't actually know that term, but okay. And but also happy Black History Month, which is all month long. Woo woo! Blackity black. It's blackity black because I'm black, y'all. And it's blackity black because I'm black. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah, but we are being bliggity black this month with our two movies that we're gonna do.
Yeah. And first of all, the love theme is also in there too, you know what I mean? For our second film.
Actually, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But today we're going to be talking about the movie Origin. Mm-hmm. Right. So if you haven't heard about it, it's a movie written and directed by Ava DuVernay. Mm-hmm. And it was her dramatization of a nonfiction book of the author who wrote the nonfiction book, cast the origins of our discontents. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to do a deep dive into that and review it for you all and give you all, well, I don't know if we're going to do a rating this time because we'll tell you our justifications later. But that's what the episode is about today, y'all. But before we do that, you guys know we have to blur it out. Bum, ba-da, blur it out. Bum, bum, blur it out. Bum, ba-da, blur it out. Bum, bum. This blurred out is brought to you by Valentine's Day. Love yourself, everybody. Even if you don't got no boo.
That's right.
Y'all gonna see my shirt too. I have this shirt that says single taken checkbox. The box is in that check. Third box. Who cares? I'm amazing.
Yeah, girl.
So all of you love yourselves. Mm-hmm. And no, the shirt doesn't say I'm single, even though it's true. All right. So Whitney, what are you blurting out about today?
Let's see. I got a few things. I watched this movie on Prime Video before they changed Prime Video that you have to have commercials or pay extra. Mm-hmm. Anyway. But it was called Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris.
I heard about that. It's the one about the dress, the lady, the like old British white lady who, mm-hmm. from like the 60s or 70s, I think.
Yeah.
Was it good?
It was really good because I was in, for whatever reason, I was interested ever since I heard about it and seeing it. So when I found out it was on that it's on Prime Video, I ended up watching it a couple weeks ago, and it was really enjoyable movie. Mm. So it's about this lady whose husband dies in the war. I can't remember if it's one or two. World War One or two, but must have been two, I guess, or some other war. I don't know what kind of wars they got over in Britain. Anyway,
they have a lot.
So, like, she's a widow, and she wants. She's like interested in like dresses, and she's a. I think she's a maid.
Yeah, I think so. She was a servant.
Yeah.
I didn't watch it. I just saw the trailer, so I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So she just really wants a really beautiful dress, and she's got, like, all of her savings that she wants to use towards, like, this beautiful dress. So she goes to, I'm trying to remember which house it was. Famous fashion house.
Chanel, I think, right?
Was it Chanel? I feel like it wasn't Chanel. Maybe it was. We'll go with Chanel for the sake of this, but she goes there, and at first they won't let her in to, like, because she wants to go and, like, buy a dress. And they're like, you know, they turn the nose up at her because she's like, no, you clearly don't have it. She's like, I've got the money. She's like, I've got cash. And she's showing them the cash. And they let her in because she has cash and because this other guy is like, well, she can be my plus one to go in. But essentially she, like, buys her dress, and the only reason they even like sell it to her is because apparently the whole house is in danger, like it's about to go under because they've got these like expensive dresses. And how many people have all this money? And it's like, but if you market to, you know, expand your marketing and who you sell to, you can maybe save this entire fashion empire. But anyway, it's got, I'm trying to think of her name. I'm blanking for whatever reason, but she's the main character in Warrior Nun and recently married to Captain America himself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really?
She's in there.
I thought an older woman that's the lead of this movie.
No. There's another character in there, and she's like a model.
Oh, yeah, Captain America.
Yeah.
Let's not talk about that, because I was still hoping on Chris Evans.
Sorry, take it. But yeah, she's in there, and it was really interesting seeing her in what I think, I don't know if it's an earlier role or not, but it's just a really, really cute story, and it's just about this woman who's just, like, so selfless, because this other, near the end, she gets her dress, she pays all this money for it, and this woman, who she used to work for, comes crying to her door about how she doesn't have anything to wear to this thing because she's trying to get a role in this movie. Mm. And this woman is behind on paying Mrs. Harris anyway.
Wow.
And so she gives her her dress to wear to this meeting with this guy. The dress catches on fire. She never got to wear it. She loaned it.
Her own dress.
She didn't even wear it first. And it ends up in the newspaper. So the woman gets this part. But she's like, yeah, sorry about that. And I'm like, you be. But they, the fashion house hears about it. And they loved her so much. And so they like make her
a new dress.
And send it to her.
Well, now you don't need to watch a movie, y'all. You just heard everything.
I'm sorry. But it was just...
It's a really nice movie, though.
It's a really nice movie.
That's lovely.
It really is. It's a lovely movie. I recommend it. So, okay. Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris on Prime Video.
All right.
Two more things I'm blurting out about. This is on Max. And I know Bola's not going to go for this one because it's a horror movie.
Hell no.
But for any of you who are horror fans, Barbarian, you have to watch it. Like... this movie is wild.
And that's all I can... Is it like Saltburn wild? You keep trying to get me to watch Saltburn.
In a different way. In a very different way. And that's all I can really say about it. It's a horror movie about this woman who ends up in a double booked Airbnb. And ends up like sharing it with the guy who's already there. Because like he's already there some kind of way. There was like some mess up and it got booked again. So just... so much stuff happens afterwards, and it is crazy. It is wild. You have got to see it.
Is it Julia Roberts and Marshall Ali?
No, okay, it's got... I'm trying to think of what the brother's name is. Son. The son of Stellan Skarsgård. Bill Skarsgård.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah, because it's not the older brother. It's not Alexander. It's his younger brother, Bill. So Bill Skarsgård is in there, who plays Pennywise in It. And I don't know who the girl is, who is kind of like one of the main characters, but it's also got, I'm trying to think the actor who's in the movie, He's Just Not That Into You. Mm. Ooh, that's another good, like...
rom-com.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I love that one. That's a
really
good
one. You gotta love that girl. She has such a cute little face.
She does.
She played Snow on
Once Upon a Time.
Once Upon a Time. But yeah, I love that actress
but
from
I
that movie.
I loved her in that movie. That's also a really great movie. You guys should check that out. But yeah, Barbarian, you got to watch it. It's one that I'm not going to do you like I did with Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris. I can't tell you much about it because it's wild. And part of it is just watching it and being like, what is going on? But yeah, check
all
that
right,
out.
All right, horror lovers, check
yes,
that out.
It's on Max. And finally, I am blurting out about the fact my brother played for me last time I was at his house. He said it was a trailer. It was a teaser. It was not a trailer. For Moana 2.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I'm so excited.
Wait a minute. How is the teaser already out? Like, I knew they're doing a second one, and I'm not sure if I'm going to like it because Lin-Manuel Miranda is not coming back to do the music. So I'm just...
What?
Yes.
What?
He is not coming back to do the music, so I'm just like, is this even going to be good? But I'm like, where did you see a teaser from?
It was on YouTube.
Oh, my goodness.
But he was like, yeah, have you seen the trailer for Moana 2? And then he played it, and I was like, oh, that wasn't a trailer. That was a teaser.
Moana, yeah. Moana is, like, coming back for real, for real. Moana 2. And they're doing the live actions coming out next year.
Yeah, because then he played me, like, oh, there's a trailer for the live action. And he played it, and I'm like, this is something fan made. This is not a trailer.
Right, right. I think this stuff pisses me off every time I fall for that stuff.
I'm like, I'm looking at it in the way that they like don't show anybody except for like The Rock's face in something that I'm like, I don't think he would wear that for this role. As Maui, this is clearly from something else. I'm like, this is a fan-made trailer. This is not a trailer for the live action.
So it wasn't even the real teaser.
No,
but they are doing the Moana 2, yeah.
I have heard that they actually are doing Moana 2, and they are doing a live action Moana, so that'll be interesting. I did read an article that had The Rock saying that they were excited because they found their Moana. I don't think anything's come out yet about who it is, because I'm sure he's gonna be playing him, you know, Maui, right, in the live action,
right?
But they aren't I don't know how to say her name, Ali Cavallo. Who voiced Moana in the original?
Yeah, she's gonna be too old.
Yeah, so she's not playing Moana for the live action one, but they said they were excited because they found their Moana for the live action movie.
That's good.
I am excited about Moana 2 because I will be up in there by myself with no kids around me.
No, I'm going to watch 2. I want to see it. I liked the first one.
Okay, yes. But my point is I'm going to be up in a Disney movie as an adult, no kids to justify.
Inside Out 2 is coming out first, so I'm watching that.
What 2?
Inside Out 2 is coming out, so I'm watching that. Yeah, I'm going to the theater for that
Yeah, I'm going to see that too. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm even more excited for Moana 2. So okay. I'm super excited about that. But that is what I am blurting out about.
All right. So I'm blurt out about 2 things, and then I'm also going to give a nerd update for anime lovers. So we'll just call that a blurred update, a blurred anime update for a few anime things are coming out. And I just want to give you guys a little update. Mm. But first, my blurred out is about a fantasy Indian movie that I watch with my family. Mm. It's called Brahmastra.
Ooh.
Yes. Brahmastra is, it's not even that new. It actually came out a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's on Hulu. It came out in the theaters and stuff, too. And I remember I wanted to watch it. But it's an actual Indian Bollywood fantasy film where people have powers and stuff, and it's based off of their mythology about the gods Shiva and all that kind of stuff, Durga and everything. But the main character of the guy is a couple, Ranbir Kapoor and Alia Bhatt, who are now married and have a little baby. Mm. But back then they were not married yet when they made the film. Mm-hmm. But I watched it finally. It was always on my radar, and I was going to watch it with my mom, and then she got all scared, spooky, because the beginning stuff was all, like, really, like, raging power. They're just explaining the story, and I was like, Mom, this is really not scary. But she got spooky, and she's like, I don't want to watch it. And then we ended up watching it, and then she loved it. But it's cool because it's, like, I've never seen an Indian movie like this where the people have powers, besides Krish and stuff from back in the day where I was like, that's a superhero one. But this is the one. Yeah, you remember the song. Okay, we're not going to sing it. But she's trying now. Sorry for the Hindi speakers. I'm sorry. I'd be trying without the languages I don't know. But when I want to sing along, I try to learn so I can sing along in the language. Anyway, but that was Krish, and that was like a superhero movie. Mm-hmm. But this one is like actual powers, where the people have powers, and you know, you have like, and the main guy, he has like firepower. Mm. So they call them Astras, and it's all based off some Hindu stuff that I'm not aware of, but it was fantastic. It was really nice. This is apparently the first one in a series that's going to happen. Unfortunately, the second one's going to come out like a lot later. And I was like, it's already been a couple years since it's already been. I think this one came out in 2021 or 2022. But I was like, so when is part 2 coming out? And it's not going to come out till like maybe 2026 or 7. I don't know.
What?
Yeah, the director put something out there this last year about it coming out, but he's like, I haven't forgotten. There is going to be a part 2 because where you leave the story, you know there's more to it, you know. But it was fantastic. I loved it. I love seeing the powers. I really liked it.
I want to see because I hate having like just like cliffhangers and having to wait.
It's not so much of a cliffhanger. Well, you do have to, but it's a satisfying ending.
Okay.
You just know that there's more to the story.
Okay.
So I can wait for the other one. I'm just mad it's gonna take them so long, but it is India, and you know, sometimes certain things take a while, especially this kind of film where there's so much money because of the visual effects of all the powers and stuff. So but it was fantastic, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
What's it on?
It's on Hulu.
Okay, cool.
And so it's called Brahmastra.
Nice. You know what's kind of cool? Have you noticed that there's been more like Bollywood or Indian movies in the theater, like actually in theaters now?
Right,
That's pretty cool.
Yes. So I was like, I need to just go and watch them one day when they're in the theater. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes they end up coming on Prime or Netflix or something. And then the ones I really want to watch don't come out, which irritates me. But I do like that they come out more with stuff. And it's a global world. Everybody enjoy everybody else's culture and watch their stuff. That's what I say. You know what I mean? My second thing I'm blurting out about is I've watched the second season of What If on Disney Plus.
Ooh, I haven't seen it yet.
I love What If, the series. Mm-hmm. I like the animation. I love the storytelling. And I even love that they got some of the characters, some of the people that were in the movies come back to voice their roles, but mm-hmm. then the other ones, like the main people, like Captain America, Iron Man, mm-hmm. and the Scarlet, Black Widow, the people that played mm-hmm. their roles, none of them have ever come back for the voiceover work. Mm-hmm. Just because they want to, like, when they're done, they're like, we want to be done.
Right,
but yeah. for some reason, the people that they get to play them sound so much like them. It's mm-hmm. so cool to watch. And I was like, oh, Downey came back for this, but he really didn't. But somebody did. But anyway, I watched season 2 of What If, mm-hmm. and I really, really loved it. Like, I was doing my hair, sitting down. I watched, like, everything for the whole day, and I was just so enthralled in this What If story. They did, like, they upped the ante on it, and it's always, like, what if this person met this person, or what if that person met that person, mm-hmm. or, and then they actually had a brand new story pop up in What If. It's a Native American superhero. Her name is Kaori, and I was just like, yo, I hope she comes in somewhere. Like, I haven't watched Echo yet, but, because one of the girls in Echo actually did the voice for Kaori.
Oh.
But I don't know if they're going to make her Kaori or not, because I think she plays a totally different character in Echo.
You should check it out. Hold
I know. I do plan to watch it. It's just my sister takes forever. And then she gets mad.
Echo was really good.
She gets mad at me if I watch stuff without her. But anyway, I don't care. But I'm going to probably watch it without her soon enough. But What If was so interesting. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I love the Peggy. You know I love Peggy.
I do.
Peggy's like, honestly, she's like literally my favorite. But Captain Britain, I don't know if she exists in the comics or not. I don't know.
Probably.
She probably does. But I love the What If world. I love the storyline, how they did it. It was so interesting this time around. It was, it was just so engrossing. I like literally watched all of it, and I thought it was so cool. It was hilarious. And I just make me go back to the feels of the main people again, you know, like I just love the world that they created the first phase. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm still enjoying the new phases now, mm-hmm. but the first initial phases and all that stuff and all that work, it's just, I love the Avengers, everything. When they're together is my favorite, as opposed to their separate works. Mm-hmm. I think if I look at their separate works, Captain America's series is still my absolute favorite.
Mm.
But when they're all together, Avengers is the best, you know? And so to have them all come back and do their parts and be who they are and be quirky and talk, it was just good. But it was the storyline for What If is really interesting. But I'm excited to see what the transmedia parts will play out, how they will play out later. Because
mm-hmm.
we did kind of see the ending of What If play out in the second Doctor Strange film. So we did see that, and so I'm wondering now with the end of What If 2 what they're gonna do with the rest of the world, and how that's gonna come out. But it was very good. Like, kudos to the team and all the people who made the stories, everything. Nebula got her own episode. I think one of the best ones was one where so what if Iron Man landed on Xandar with the Grandmaster, that crazy guy from Ragnarok. Oh man, it was so interesting. So I liked it a lot. So watch What if you haven't, if you're a comic book nerd like me, or just a superhero nerd. I enjoyed it. It was really good.
Okay.
Yeah, so now I'm going into my updates.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so this is an anime lover's update. So mm-hmm. I just have a few updates. One, I was just aware of a new comic, a new anime con, I guess. Let's just say it's a pop culture con.
Mm-hmm.
But it's called ChromaCon, and it's in Baltimore. It's happening in March. And I have never heard anything about this, but it's like supposed to be an all-inclusive, kind of like Blurred Con, but not specifically Blurred. It's mm-hmm. supposed to be like all-inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in the Baltimore Harbor area, which we've been to before. Mm-hmm. The area's pretty cool. It's a 3-day con, of course, so you can always go there. But they have like day passes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like if you go on Friday, it's like $20, Saturday's $50, Sunday's $30.
Mm-hmm.
But then you can get like VIP passes, all that kind of stuff. But I just think it's cool that another con came about, and it's like a more of an inclusive con. And it's like they call it a pop culture con. Now, I don't know what the name is behind ChromaCon is, but I mean, there's a bunch of cons pop up now. There's Awesome Con. I didn't even know what that one is about. So I just think it's cool that they have more options and in more cities
mm-hmm.
for people who want to join and do that stuff.
Yeah.
All right. My second anime update is, so you guys know I blurted out last time about Spy X Family.
Mm-hmm.
I love Spy X Family. I still, Whitney, I think you need to give it another shot.
Okay.
I really do think you need to give it, like, watch like more than one episode. And
I
then
mean,
see
I
if
watched,
you don't.
I watched more than one.
You
but
did.
Maybe I need to go for
which one? You don't, like what? Two maybe.
I saw the one where they went to like this fair and somebody had gotten kidnapped, or something. I don't know what episode number that was.
Okay. Did you watch it in order?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there is only the one season out. The second season is not dubbed in Hulu yet. But I did watch it on my fishy sides. Anyway, but I'm excited because Spy X Family is coming out with a film, the movie. Mm-hmm. And it's like a totally, it's not part of the manga or anything, but it's like a totally brand new storyline made up for the show. Mm-hmm. And I saw the trailer yesterday in the dubbed and it was fire. I was like shouting, like, I was like, yeah! So I'm excited because I just love it. I just love it. So I adore Spy Family and Spy X Family. I think that's the one. Anyway, but I really like the concept of the show, so I'm excited. So anime lovers, come out April. This might be in the theaters. I'm gonna roll up into the theater. I'm gonna roll up to the theater and watch it for real.
That's also a cool kind of. It seems to me almost like a newer trend of anime movies also. Because I know The Boy and the Heron was in
theaters. Yes, it was in theaters. It's no longer in theaters, so I got to find another way to watch it. Because I actually did want to watch that too. Mm-hmm. So The Boy and Heron. I just like that Miyazaki-san came back and did something else after so long. They always say they're not going to do nothing, and then they pop back up. Like, 20 years. That's what happened at the Grammys too. Like, Joni Mitchell and Billy Joel came back, and like they haven't performed or made any new music in like 20 years or plus, and then they both popped up. So I'm just like, you keep saying y'all retire, and y'all pop back up. You know what I mean?
But it's like, I think it's about retiring is about not having to do it. But if you want to, it's like,
it's an option that there. It's good for them.
It's an option. It's like, but I don't have the pressure of people expecting new stuff from me because I told you I'm retired. I just gave you this bonus.
Right.
If I happen to do another bonus, just be happy about it. Don't ask me no questions.
Don't answer no questions, y'all. Okay, so my last update is, I'm not gonna lie, this is a Naruto update.
Oh my god.
This one is like a fan one, because, you know, you guys, Bola loves Naruto. It's her most famous favorite anime of all time. Mm-hmm. Yes, bring me all the Naruto things. My sister literally bought me some Naruto gibbets from my Crocs yesterday, and I was very happy. And a keychain. But the Hinata one didn't come, so I was mad. I was like, where's Hinata? I can't have Naruto without Hinata. Anyway, but I saw online yesterday that, Kishimoto's the maker of Naruto.
Okay.
And he wrote a one shot. He did like a poll in Japan to see who everyone's favorite character is. And so Minato Namikaze, who's Naruto's father in the movies, but he dies before Naruto's, like, he dies when Naruto's a baby. But so Naruto didn't know his father. He's also the fourth Hokage, who's like the leader of the village. But he didn't know that till he's older. But everybody loves him, Minato, and like Minato won the popularity poll, right? So Kishimoto wrote and made a special one-shot manga, which is like a contained one. Like, it's not like
limited series.
Yeah, you know what that is. So he made a one-shot manga of just a slice of what happened in his life. Stories so we can learn a little about him, Kushina, his wife, everything, Naruto's mom. And everybody really, really liked it. I read it too online and I really liked it. And I was like, oh, this is cool. But I didn't think anything else was going to become of it. But apparently now fans want an animated version of it in some form. And they were like, this is going to be fan made. So I saw online today that Kishimoto was like greenlighting it, that the fans can produce this one shot. Because I was like, y'all ain't even come back with Boruto yet. So I was like, how y'all trying to do a one shot of Naruto? Y'all said y'all were going to have some 20th anniversary episodes of Naruto. Four of them come, and now that has been postponed as well. So I'm like, Studio Piro, what y'all doing? But I like that they're like, they're letting the fans do this. So fans of Naruto, we about to have a one shot about Minato. It's awesome. I'm excited. So I can't wait for that as well.
Okay. All right.
All right. So that's all my like anime nerd updates. Please don't come at me if I didn't talk about your favorite show, Jujutsu Kaisen. I don't watch everything.
Not legitimate anime, but I just saw, because you know, like when you log into like the Netflix app on like a TV and they have like the screensavers with stuff passing by. Avatar comes out this month.
That was my other one. I'm so mad I forgot. Yes. Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Oh, the live action. You. Sorry, let me.
No, that's part of our update. That was literally on my list and I just left it. But Avatar, The Last Airbender, the live action is coming out this. I'm a big Avatar.
And I can't remember if it's the 22nd or the 23rd, but it comes out this month, you guys.
February. Yes, I'm a big Avatar fan. So I absolutely love Avatar, The Last Airbender. I watched Legend of Korra. Not so happy with how that one ended, but I still watched it. Anything in the world, I will
22nd,
watch.
February 22nd.
Yeah, so you guys know I'm about to be on it, okay? I don't know what I'm more excited about, this or Bridgerton coming. But Bridgerton's like going to take forever, even though that's not an anime.
Yeah,
but
when is Bridgerton? Like March? May?
May.
May.
When we come back. Yeah, May.
And then they're doing two parts, aren't they?
This is stupid.
But at least I think everything. It's May and June, so at least it's only 1 month apart.
Oh, God, just put everything together. And then they send out these little teaser clips that are pissing me off. I'm like, if you don't give me this show, stop teasing me already. I know the show is done.
I saw the teaser clip with like with Penn. And
I know the show is done. Like, stop it.
I'm like, I want it now.
Right. Like, stop it. So I was like, y'all need all this little teasing. Y'all doing all these little clips. I don't want to see it. Bring the show. Because it was supposed to come in Christmas time last year. And I'm pissed off because they pushed it for some unknown reason. And I was like, I was all set for Bridgerton on Christmas time. I was all set because it's my favorite season. Colin and Penelope. I was like, nah, so this excited. Is my favorite couple right so now. Excited. So let's do this. But no. Not
I'm
going to
use a term that my mom has used during line dance class, which I think she heard from someone else. But when like when we're practicing or when we're learning a new line dance, we like do the steps. And then at some point, like you'll actually put the song on. And my mom starts doing this now. She's like, cut on.
What's that?
Like, basically, cut it on. Like, cut the music on. Let's just go.
Okay.
So, I'm going to say that for Bridgerton. Cut on.
Mm-hmm. Let's go. Anyway. So, the blurting and the anime updates are over. We'll put some more information in the show notes if there's, like, maybe some trailers or whatever. Hmm. If you guys want clips, anything, just proof and evidence. All right, guys. So we're going to get into our review now. I just feel like we have to get serious because we're laughing a lot. Only because this film that we watch, Origin, was it was such a deep movie. Like, the movie really resonates. It stays with you for a while. Like, I was totally wrecked by this film by watching it. I was literally crying my eyes out. And it was out of pain. Pain for the pain, watching the pain that we inflict on ourselves, like the systems of the world. Mm. It was the pain of the way of the world. You know what I mean? And that's like not a pain that is anyone's fault. It's just the pain at the state of being that we're in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that, like, wow, how do we make this better? You know, like, I'd immediately go there next. But watching what was happened or what has happened to folks because of this stupid system that Miss Wilkerson has made us privy to, you know, we just think it's racism, but it's like racism is just another form of it. And she shows how it's really called caste system that is all of them. And everyone knows about the caste system in India. That's like the one everyone knows. But she basically, with her book, her thesis is that the whole world is in a caste system. There's just different versions of it everywhere. Mm-hmm. And she uses multiple stories and multiple atrocities and historical atrocities that have happened to the black people leaving Africa and becoming slaves, and how America was based on the caste system of racism. Where race is the main pinnacle of that one. Then she talked about the Holocaust and how the Jews, so that was like a religious one. Because if you look at it, it's the same kind of hierarchy of like who's on the bottom, who's the worst, who you're blaming for everything, who you're treating terribly, who doesn't have access. But if you look at it, it was white people on white people crime. You know what I mean? And I always thought about that point too. And then she also talks about the main caste system people know about, which is in India. And that's also the same race of people. But they have some kind of structure based off of, I don't even know what the Indian caste system is based off of. I don't know who determines who's in the Brahmin caste or the Dalit caste, which is
the
lowest.
I wondered about that too. Because I'm like,
part I didn't know.
How do you know? Like, how would they even identify?
How can you move up the caste? That's why I'm like, can you move up? Like, can you get
and
out
if
of that?
Do, like, what is the indicator that you are
an untouchable? Right? Most of the time, I know that some form of colorism is part of it a little bit. That usually Dalits were always the darker skinned Indians, the lower class, the poor. And that's because the conditions of their society make them that way too. Like, not the skin color, but like, they were always the laborers, the people that worked in the fields, the people that did the hard work. And then they made them continue to do the lowest of the low. And then they don't give them anything. And it's almost like their existence is a bother And I'm like, but it's so terrible because, like, how can you just decide? They're a human being. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. How can you just say, oh, yeah, you guys are untouchable? And there's no, like, there's no literal or there's no, like, empirical evidence to say these people caused this or these people should be called untouchable. Mm-hmm. It's just some arbitrary thing that they made. They're like, oh, yeah, you group of people, we just, this is what our society is doing. You're the group of people that no one can touch. You guys are disgusting. You don't deserve anything. We're going to treat you terribly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so wrong. But she showed about how it happens everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that, actually, can I share this with you real quick?
Yeah.
I want to share Isabel Wilkerson's definition of caste because she started this because of the Trayvon Martin case.
Mm-hmm.
And someone had asked her to write something
mm-hmm.
interesting. But she was looking at how she's like, this doesn't make sense. Why do you have a Hispanic person attacking a black boy trying to protect a white neighborhood? Like, it doesn't make sense. If you're looking at traditional American racism, which is white against black,
mm-hmm.
this doesn't make sense for a Spanish person to do that because they're right there in the rung. They kind of link black and Spanish people together almost mm-hmm. In the race hierarchy.
Mm.
I hate to say, but yeah. So she was like, something else is awry here. And then she saw and was reading and researching all these stories, and she saw the connection between the Holocaust and the treatment of the Dalits in India, who are the untouchables, and this case, and what's happening here in America, mm-hmm. what has happened during the Atlantic slave trade. And she determined, after all this research and visiting these countries mm-hmm. and doing great thinker, great mind, and she determined that it's really caste. And she was saying that the definition of caste is that it's an arbitrary, artificial, graded ranking of human value in society, and that you can use any metric to determine the hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
So in America, race, the founders used the caste system, but they just decided to make it about race and how mm-hmm. you look. In Germany, the Jews, they used the religious caste system. So mm-hmm. they just blamed the Jews. And then they were like, well, if you're Jewish, you're the one that's going to be on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And in India, again, I don't know what the determinant is for the Dalit society, but then they use something else. And I'm thinking it's also socioeconomical with India as well, because the Brahmins are always the rich in the top, and they're always the fair-skinned ones because they were inside. Mm-hmm. They're also the ones mixed with the Persians. So they're like, they have white, and they have white blood as well. So it's like, it's so many things with India. Like, mm-hmm. I still wish to go into that and we'll learn a little bit more. But I knew about the different caste mm-hmm. systems. There's, like, I think at least four.
Mm-hmm.
The Brahmins are at the top, the Dalits are at the bottom, and then there's, like, two in the middle. But I don't know all the names. I forgot them. Mm-hmm. You know? But, yeah, so I really liked her definition of that. And she made a great case for this Ava DuVernay as well, bringing mm-hmm. it to our attention. She's like, you guys, we need to pay attention because this is the real issue.
Mm-hmm.
This is the real problem. Race is not something we should just think, oh, no, that's not the main case. Racism is bad, of mm-hmm. course, but it's just a part of this particular thing that keeps happening all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that struck me the most. And I really had a case, like, I really want to read this book now.
I was at, like, it's not my, I'm not usually a nonfiction reader mm. unless it's like on a topic that I'm trying to do research about because I'm trying to, I don't know, like a business book or something. But after watching this movie, I also am pretty interested right. in reading it.
Right, right. And so the funny thing is, I remember telling you guys yesterday night when we watched the film that my cousin told me to watch, to read the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was like, oh, what is he talking about? And it was like, okay, cast. And I was like, okay, the title is interesting. And I remember I put it in my Audible queue and I just like kind of left it there. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I'll get to it. It's in the queue.
Mm-hmm.
But then I saw that this film was being made and I just saw the trailer and I was like, this looks good, whatever this is.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh yeah, this is just something I wanted to watch. Because I wanted to see what all, I saw the different scenes and everything. And I was like, what's happening here?
Mm-hmm.
It had Anjanue Ellis Taylor, or Taylor Ellis? Ellis Taylor. And then it had John Bernthal, who's a Punisher, whom I love. And also he's also from Bear. He's in The Walking Dead? Mm-hmm. John Bernthal?
In the first season.
Oh, okay. But he's also in Bear.
That's right.
The Bear, the TV series.
Mm-hmm.
He plays our main dude's older brother mm-hmm. that killed himself, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, it was just, I wanted to know what this connection was. I was like, what's this? Okay, is this about an interracial love story, whatever, whatever. And then I found out that it was about the author who wrote this book. And I was like, wait a minute. I know about this book.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is interesting. And then I saw what Ava DuVernay did. And I was like, man, y'all, it was so moving. Like, it was one of those things you had to, like, you couldn't talk too much. You were just trying to take everything in.
Yeah. At the end of the movie, all three of us were just kind of, I remember just sitting there.
Yeah. Whitney, you were super quiet. I mean, you usually don't talk too much in the movies, but mm-hmm. you'll laugh or you'll make a side comment mm-hmm. once or so. I'm usually responding to me.
I had one Lord have mercy during the movie.
Really? I didn't even hear it. Because that's why I was like, Whitney was like, I mean, I remember Anu was like, is Whitney okay? I was like, let me check on her.
It's probably because they have that like, the thing.
Yeah, that
because, like, when her cousin was, like, on her deathbed, because, like, all this loss, and then when you see, because, like, when she had the little mask, I'm like, oh, well, maybe she just had, you know, she caught a bad cold. Did she catch a bad cold?
It looked like she had dialysis from the first thing. Or
yeah, and then when she was on, and then when she was like, I think today's the day, or something like that, around that point when Niecy Nash's character was just got, you could tell that she was gonna die, I was just like, Lord have mercy.
And oh my gosh, so the author herself went through, like, within 16 months three people close to her died. And I mean, you're talking about one of the things I don't understand even is how she was able to endure and continue research when that kind of tragedy happened all at once.
Mm-hmm.
And it was while she was researching these things.
Yeah.
I watched a lot of footage of the behind the scenes of interviews and stuff that I'll post in the show notes for you guys. But because I really wanted to know the process, the mm-hmm. film like this, I really wanted to know the process, why Ava DuVernay went about making this film the way she did. Mm-hmm. It was so interesting to find out her process and her thing. And then also to find out that Ava DuVernay doesn't get offered, like, movies. She goes about and looks for her own films to make. And I was like, Ava, like, when she said that, even Charlamagne Tha God, in the interview I watched, Charlamagne Tha God, everybody, they were kind of shocked. They're like, you don't get offered. She's like, no, I don't get offered roles. I find them.
Mm-hmm.
I take on my own work, because she's not that kind of director that, you know, she would love to receive things to do, but she doesn't get offered scripts and stuff like that. So she goes and looks out for these things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because some people drop things in her ear. Like, Oprah was the one that encouraged her to read this book during the pandemic and was really pushing for her. She's like, you need to look at this.
Mm-hmm.
David Oyelowo, the black actor who played Martin Luther King in Selma, which she ended up doing, he brought the idea to her. But then she had to start looking at how to write the script and all that kind of stuff. But so it was so interesting to me that she was like, she was reading the book. She struggled with the book and she read it three times. And then it was like the third time when she's like, this needs to be brought. But everyone said to her, this film is unadaptable. I mean, the book is unadaptable. It's like, it's not even a film. It's a treatise, really. It's like a thesis, and it's nonfiction. It's, you know, it's facts and figures that are in this. Like, how are you going to make a film about this? But then she decided to interview, and I asked the author and learn some more about her life. And then she's like, that's the story, that's the vehicle I need. Because what do we need in a story? We need a character to follow. We need someone to, you know,
you need someone there. You need someone to either root for or to root against.
Someone you're following along in the story. We always need a main character so that you can follow the plot and then receive that message through what they're experiencing. And so the author herself ended up being the best vehicle to show this story because she was experiencing all these things and this trauma and this grief. For her to lose her husband, her mother, and her cousin within 16 months, like, they all died within 16 months. That is shocking.
That is an, I would probably find that to be an insurmountable amount of loss.
Not at the, in the time span. Not even a whole, like,
right. That's what I mean.
The time span is too much. Like, it can really rock somebody. So to me, I'm in awe that Isabel Wilkerson herself was able to continue this kind of research. Because this kind of research, she encountered one, it's a lot of stories. It's a lot of diving, a lot of deep. She had traveled a lot, mm-hmm. but it's also, she encountered a lot of struggle. She encountered some people. I mean, we saw the scene where she had talks with her German counterparts in Germany. Mm-hmm. And this lady was like, your thesis doesn't make sense. You can't compare the Holocaust to slavery. And mm-hmm. it was like almost, it was very contentious, like a little talk, because mm-hmm. at first you could just see how she was like, I know you're not trying to, we're not trying to do the trauma Olympics here. But it was sounded like that. I had that
same thought when it was happening. It's like, we're not trying to compete.
Right. But she was also trying to show her that she did not get the thesis. Like, mm-hmm. you're trying to say the same thing happened here. Mm-hmm. What the white woman was saying, the German woman was saying, that the Holocaust was about extinction. And the what happened with black people was about economic gain. Mm-hmm. So she was like, yeah, they treated black people like nothing, but she was like, they didn't want them to die. They just wanted to use them. Mm-hmm. She said in Germany, Hitler wanted them all to die. Like mm-hmm. He just wanted to wipe them off the face of the earth. Mm-hmm. I understand the difference, but she could have come at her a little bit better. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I assume she was Jewish herself. So it's like one of those things where you're like,
I didn't assume that. I didn't assume that character was Jewish or that person.
Oh, really? I assumed that she was Jewish.
No, I don't know. I just knew she was white German.
Because like when she was talking to Niecy Nash's character, her cousin, and she mm-hmm. was like, leave the Jews alone.
She was like, I thought she was saying that she should just leave the topic, like leave them out of what her research is. That's what I thought she was saying.
I think that's what she was saying, but I think mm-hmm. I think she was also saying that because, like, the woman probably felt that strongly about it, because I assumed that she probably was a Jewish German.
Okay. Well, it wasn't clear, and it wasn't made clear to us if she was or not, but I like that she persevered anyway. And mm-hmm. I think stuff like that is good to encounter. And I think in the world of intellectuals where you're debating and all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff, you do find this kickback, and that's good for you.
Yeah, you expect that. Like, any type of, what do you call it?
Intellectual sparring.
Yeah, because... The point of a, like, what do you do for a master's?
Thesis.
A thesis, but you have to defend it. Like, right. The whole point
is to defend what you're saying, facts, evidence.
So if nobody
evidence.
Has something against you to say against it, then how do you defend
it?
So
and then
it can poke
holes as well. Then you also need to
And you expect that. And it, mm-hmm. I think something like that would make your work better.
Right. And I think it led her through to, more eager to do it. Like, she's mm-hmm. like, you know, I'm going to prove this woman wrong. Mm-hmm. I know there's something here, and I'm going to find it. I remember in the scenes where she was talking to people about it, everything, and she was just like, I'm not seeing it. I don't understand
how these things connect.
Yes. She's like, these are all different atrocities in the world, but like, what's going on mm-hmm. here? And they weren't seeing it. But it's like, that's the thing. When you have like a vision and a plan for your life and things, it's not everybody's going to get it right away. Mm-hmm. You just have to persevere through it and continue on. And I think Isabel did that. Mm-hmm. And I also think this work kind of saved her, too.
Yeah, I think that's why she continued on even after mm-hmm. all that loss. Because mm-hmm. kind of it was one thing that was connecting the loss.
Right.
Because, like, she was arguing with her husband mm-hmm. before he died about, like, she wanted to. She was like, I should spend more time with my mom. He was like, she wanted to go to the nursing home because she didn't want you to have to do that. He was like, but then now you don't, you know, you're not having to do that, but you're not working. He was like, why aren't you working? Mm-hmm. Like, this is what you love. You should be working.
Right.
And then
writing your books.
And then he died. And then it's like her mom. And it's like the reason her mom went into nursing homes, like, she wanted you to be able to make your dreams come mm-hmm. true. And then her cousin, the same thing. It's like, all of them were telling her, this
continue,
is important.
Continue.
You need
what
to
you're
continue.
Doing is important. Right, right. And so, I remember it was so tragic when Ava DuVernay was talking about this in one of her interviews. She was like, one of the things is that we got to go through Isabel's life. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, like, we saw how many people were involved in her studying and her research and everything. And then she made it like that for a dramatization and for the show, but it's because she did have to talk to a lot of people and mm-hmm. research, but she made the point about how she's like, yeah, we're seeing how she's doing it in the film. Mm-hmm. Like, we're going along the journey with mm-hmm. her, but she's like, the real Isabel was doing everything alone. Mm-hmm. She was doing and dealing, grappling with all these things alone. Mm-hmm. And so that she felt that in her, and then that's why she's like, she wanted to make sure that she presented all these things, her mind, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? Because it was like, she was we were seeing the stories that she was reading, mm-hmm. but we were seeing them played out. The stories and the anecdotes that she ended up putting in the book. Mm-hmm. We were seeing those scenes dramatized for us, mm-hmm. you know? And so it was almost like the fact that she made them characters in the film helped us to see, help us to get into the mind of Isabel. And also, bringing her life story, the tragedy she suffered, her family situations, we could like connect with her as well. And not just this great work. It was the person.
Quote unquote thesis. Because to me, what they said about it's unadaptable mm-hmm. because it's a thesis, that would have probably have been true if it weren't for the stories, because that's what like human beings connect with most is stories. Mm-hmm. And because this movie was told through Isabel's story, through the stories that she researched about other people's lives in order to make her thesis into her book. Like, the stories is what makes you feel the movie. That's right. What sticks with you, because it's not just facts and figures and being like, this is my argument and this is what I have to support it. It's like, these are people's stories. These right. are their lives. And that sticks with you.
It draws you in.
Yeah.
It draws you in. I mean, I have this example that I was recently for work. I had done like a business writing training at work. Mm-hmm. And the author was telling, I mean, the teacher for the training course was telling us about different ways of drawing people in mm-hmm. when we need to speak to them or listening and all that kind of stuff. And so he was telling us about different methods we could use to draw people in. You could use like shock value. You can use everything, startling like figures. You mm-hmm. could use telling them a story. Mm-hmm. And then he gave an example about how this guy was like giving a TED talk about drunk driving and mm-hmm. stuff. And you're like, yeah, everyone knows about drunk driving, whatever, whatever. So the guy decided, like, to draw people into him. He decided to do something really interesting. He asked everybody in the room, how many of you had something to drink tonight? And, you know, people raised their hand. Mm-hmm. And then he says, so how many of you have had something to drink and then you got behind a car and drove? You know, some people raised their hand. Mm-hmm. A few didn't, you know. But then he asked, the third question was, how many of you have drank something, got behind the wheel of a car, and killed all of your friends? Nobody raised their hand, mm-hmm. but the speaker did. He rose his hand. He's like, mm-hmm. that happened to me. He said, me and my friends got drunk, and me and my frat brothers got drunk, and I just had to drive. We crammed ourselves into a car, and I crashed the car, and all of my friends died except for me. And that pulled everybody into the story right away. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was super shocking, right?
Right.
And so it's just like he personalized the story. He made it by himself. Because mm-hmm. it's, again, everyone's like, yeah, drunk driving is terrible. But it's like, why should I care about this? Mm-hmm. It's like, you need that whole thing. That it was a shock value thing because mm-hmm. it made sense for the example. Mm-hmm. But it was very moving because you're like, oh, wow. Because then you immediately want to be like, what happened? Mm-hmm. How are you? So, you know, and then he started talking about his story and like why his life purpose is all about combating life. Drunk driving, mm-hmm. right? So it kind of helps us with this where she was grappling with, she had an interracial relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, she was also dealing with having to write these stories mm-hmm. about the people wanted her to speak on these issues of race and things, the Trayvon Martin case, mm-hmm. you know, being in touch with some leaders and learning these things about the Dalit leader and all the different stories that she accumulated, you know? And so her bringing these shocking examples and things, like, those are the things I remember, too, about mm-hmm. from the film. I'm like, wow, really want to know more about the black and the white couple that went undercover in the South to write the book Deep South, you know?
I would like, I'm actually interested in
me
that.
Me too. I'm like, I would love to, like, really learn about their life and stuff. And
right?
I mean, the tragic, like, what made me really break down was the story of the little boy in the pool. Mm-hmm. The black boy in the pool, he was the only black boy on the baseball team. And then for a treat for winning, they were
Albright.
Albright's story. They were supposed to go to the pool. And because he was black, he was not allowed in the pool. And just what happened to him, it was just so wrong and cruel. You know what I mean? To do to a small child. Hmm. And I remember the author was saying that she knows that a part of that young boy died that day due to his treatment of what happened to him. Can you imagine? He was not allowed to go in the pool because they thought, because of his blackness, that he would contaminate the pool because they would have to clean it again. And it was just all this nonsense attributed to.
And then the solution that issue. They came up with was they're like, okay, they got him like a pool float.
And just dragged him around the pool.
He dragged him around the pool. He was like, do not touch the water. And you can just see him just rigid on there. He was so afraid to make any contact with the water. It was like, it seems like it would have been almost better to not even have done that. Like, it seemed like that made it that much worse.
Right. And in the story, it was like the white man that was his friend that witnessed this was telling how it was like something that they all were dealing with. But it was almost like,
they don't understand.
They don't understand. And especially since they're kids. Right. They don't understand. But it's like they're witnessing something that's not right.
This is not natural. This is a construct that we make. Right. That this is something that we make as a society.
Right.
Which is shown by the children, like, that we don't understand.
Right. And it's just something that everyone just falls in line. But it was, in the story, the white man that was telling Anjanou this, I mean, not Anjanou, telling Isabel Wilkerson this story, it was like, you could tell this thing bothered him and stayed with him. And he witnessed this. And he was like, man, I wish I could have done better. I wish I could have stood up. I wish I could have fought. You know, but at the time, they had to listen.
9 years old.
Yeah, you're only a kid. But even as a kid, you could see these things are not right. And I think that was Isabel's purpose and point of what of bringing this to our attention. Because she's like, this is happening continually in the world. And she talks about it like she used the example of the big old house. You did not cause the old house to be decrepit and all these issues, but you're inheriting the house now, and you have to do something about it.
Everything so it's like, from here on, even though you didn't do it, you're responsible.
Exactly. So as the person who has the home now, it's like, what are you going to do with the home? Are you going to continue to let it fall into squalor and disarray and decay? Or are you going to try and do something to fix it? And I think that's the call to action that I liked that she left us with. It was like her, she says, like, I didn't mean to tell you, like, I'm not showing you these things because I can fix it. She's like, this has been a problem for thousands of years. No one person can fix this. But we as a society of people have to come together and look at what are we going to continue to keep doing about this.
Over me.
Exactly. I really, really like that. And that part made me cry, like the end, where you see her walking out of the old house. She fixed it up. The old house, because of course, with all the tragedy she suffered, I would not want to stay in those houses either. I would have fixed it up and you know, give it and then move on and then give it away. And so she did that. She was first going to do as is because it was going to cost her too much money. But she's like, let me just fix it up and then I can get more money from it. But it was like, it was like a big metaphor for her life and for this, for what we're doing. So it's like the connection was there, right? But it was that ending part where they showed her coming out the house with tears in her eyes, and she was done with the book, and she had done her speech, and you know, the book was out there, and then she was seeing the characters. We were seeing the characters look at her. The story of the guy, the family from Nazi Germany, the one man who did not Heil Hitler in the picture. Turned out he had a Jewish wife. You know, what happened to them? And then the two couples, the black and white anthropologists that were undercover in the Deep South to uncover the injustices going on there, the lynchings and all that stuff. Even the picture of the Trayvon Martin. I love that.
That she was decided the initial to do story. That was like what the movie started out with.
Right.
And as I'm watching it, I'm like, this seems a lot like it's like the Trayvon Martin. And then it like stops at the point where he's like, I think he's following me.
Right.
And then it cuts to another scene and I'm like, was this Trayvon Martin?
That's what I was thinking too. I was like, and then I love that she decided to do that because that's a catalyst for everything. It was a perfect thing. And you know what? In my research, I found two things I wanted to bring up that I found quite interesting. And you just have to know that, hey, when something's meant to be, is meant to be. With the pool scene, the actor that played the white person telling Isabel the story, the onlooker. So Ava DuVernay talked about how that was not originally in the script at all. That they were just going to do the scenes with the black boy and everything. There wasn't no person there. But the problem is that white guy was an extra on the set that day. And then he was looking at what the scene set up and he was like, what's going on here? So he just decided to ask her a question. And he was like, oh, I understand this. This happened to me. So he told her how he witnessed the same thing growing up as a kid, and how he was white and in the South, and there was a pool situation, and this black boy was not allowed in the pool. And the really interesting thing was that, so they had to reset the scene, and they had to call Anjanou back because she was already done for the day. They had to call her back to interview this man. And the guy really drew on his own experience. Like, she didn't really have much to write for him, but he drew on his own experience of what happened to him when he saw that. And the funny thing is, she didn't tell him the age the white boy was when AR and AI, right? The black man in the story?
Albright.
Sorry. Thank you. I was totally wrong. But the guy said 9 years old instinctively because that's how old he was when he experienced his own. But that was the exact same age that guy was when he experienced that.
Wow.
Look at that. Look at God, you know? And that wasn't planned. But it happened, and she was just like, you just have further evidence of what this shared experience that we're all under, right?
Can I also, like, comment on, like, a nice piece of movie making, I guess. When her husband died, you see her like laying in this like pile of leaves, and then he's on the other side laying in the pile of leaves. And then her mother dies and she's laying on the pile of leaves and her mother's on the other pile of leaves. And like you see a hand come into the frame on Isabel and like touch her face.
Right.
And I think she says, "You'll be all right."
Right.
And the same thing happens in, like, the after the telling of the Albright story. He's, like, laying in a pile of leaves. And Isabel's also laying in a pile of leaves. And he's, like, tears are coming down his eyes. And you see a hand come in, and it's Isabel's hand on his face. And she's, like, "You'll be all right." And I thought that...
the juxtaposition.
Right.
It was really... definitely in Ava's mind. She explained that in the clips that I had sent you. But she said that she did it that way because when her father died, that's how she felt. That she just wanted to disappear into this pile of leaves, like just into the ground and just lay there because she was so devastated by the loss. So that's why she had shown... to depict Isabel's grief for those two. But the mix, the two together, like, that was just genius, like, filmmaking, connecting, storytelling. Because you're right, it was so impactful that she was reaching out to the boy, telling him he's going to be all right. After witnessing that kind of cruelty, like, just unnecessary. Like, he's a human being, like, you know, your skin's not going to come off any more than anyone else's skin comes off in the pool. You know what I mean? And it was, you just see the stupidity, really. But, you know, a lot of people have approached Trayvon Martin's mom, Miss Fulton was her name. A lot of people approach her to do the story, to do the film version, all that kind of stuff. But she has declined multiple times.
Why would you want to relive that trauma?
She didn't trust anybody that came at her. But for some reason, Ava DuVernay contact her, told her what she wanted to do, and she immediately said yes. She was so, and Ava said how so nervous she was. She was like, she was so nervous to talk to this woman. And she was like, the woman could tell she was nervous because she was like, "Your voice is so shaky. What's wrong?" She's like, "Just speak," you know. But it's because she really wanted to her to trust her and know that she would not unhandle her son's life like so other people might have. And she was like, that's why she made sure to show Trayvon before he was doing things. She's like, I need to humanize him so that people don't just see he's just a black boy that died. He was a young man who was talking to his friend on the phone. He had a homegirl. He had food he liked. He was scared. You saw those things. And another thing I found out is that audio clipping that we heard of the 911 call is the exact real one. That was really that guy's voice. What was his name? George something.
Floyd.
No, not George Floyd.
George.
But his name was George Mendez or Men something. The guy something that killed Trayvon. But that was his real voice. That was the real 911 call. That was the one. You know what's interesting? It's just like he still decided to like deputize himself when the emergency calls were like, "Don't do that." You could hear it on the call and he still didn't care. So it was just crazy. But she loved what she did. She was like, thank you. And she appreciated it. She didn't cry or anything. All the people, his family members did. But when she saw the scenes and how she depicted it, she was fine with it because she knew the greater scope of what she wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And this is the vehicle she felt like, yes, my son's story could be part of this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I really, I mean, just seeing how she did it was, it was very impactful to me too, because you're just like, wow, this is really a boy scared for his life,
it being attacked for no reason. It made it that much more horrific.
Yes. Yes, it did. Because you're just like, he just went to the store to get candy. He wasn't doing anything, you He's know? Just
walking home, not...
And then this guy just decides he can shoot him for no reason. Mm-hmm. You know? But this movie brought up so many different points. But I think the poignant one was the mistreatment and the how this group think. How it's like we learn social constructs from society and stuff. But mm-hmm. it's like we as people really need to evaluate what we're doing and seeing. Mm-hmm. Whether, because we are perpetrators, if we continue to act like everyone else is acting, mm-hmm. we're perpetrators of the same violence and horrendous mm-hmm. nonsense that's, yeah. you know, keeps living. It's like all this stuff keeps living because we allow it. Mm-hmm. But if you don't be those people like Dr. King and everything that stand up and change mm-hmm. and like fight for this, then nothing's going to change for those. And we're going to keep watching all these things. We're going to keep letting the house we inherited crumble. You know what I mean? That was Michael such a Jackson's salient point song to me.
Is really perfect for this,
right?
What did you say?
Which one?
Human Nature.
Ah, yeah.
I'm talking to the man in the mirror. Right. I'm asking him to change his ways.
Oh, that one's just called Man in the Mirror. Human Nature is the other song.
Oh, why? Okay, okay. Sorry. Yeah. I meant to say Man in the Mirror.
Right.
And no message could have been any clearer. If you want to make the world a better place, take a look at yourself and then make that change.
Change. Oh, man. Na, 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 na. Okay.
But it's true.
Gotta love Michael Jackson. But
it's so, I felt like it's so true, especially in the context of this movie, because it's like, sometimes there's not really anything you can do to change other people. You can only control yourself. You can only control what you do. So you change yourself. And sometimes you making a change will help other people. It's interesting. It makes mm-hmm. me think about the scene with the plumber.
Right, right. Talk about it.
Like,
and this wasn't in the book. This is just some stuff that Ava found out from her interview with Isabel's life.
So there's a plumber. Like the basement is flooded, and I think it's her mom's house for Isabel. And it's played by the
Nick Offerman.
Yeah, Nick Offerman. Mm-hmm. And she's like, my husband died, and he doesn't say anything. There's no, I'm sorry for your loss or anything. And she just kind of gives him a look, and she's just standing there, and he's like just writing on his pad and stuff. And he just, it just feels so callous. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, my mom died recently as well. She's like, is your mom still living? And he's like, she died in, I forgot when he said, like 91. She was like, I'm sorry for your loss. He's like, what about your dad? And he's like, he's 76 or something. And she was like, my dad's not alive. Like, but I guess like, no matter what, you still miss them no matter how they were. He was like, no, not him. Like he was a son of a bitch or something. Mm-hmm. He was like, I would not miss,
miss his dad at all.
I wouldn't miss him. But it was like a connection. She was like reaching out, trying mm-hmm. to make this connection with someone who had like a wall up.
Yeah. Cause you could tell, cause he had a Make America Great Again. So you could tell he's like probably like closet racist or something.
Yeah.
And he just didn't want one. That was the issue I was having. I was like, do your job. He's like, I don't know. I guess sometimes I felt like both of the workers that she had mm-hmm. were like white, and she's the black lady in this like white neighborhood or affluent neighborhood, mm-hmm. and they don't want to like work on her house or do the stuff they're supposed to do. And I'm mm-hmm. like, do your job. Like it seemed like he had this wall up, but it was also like, he's not trying to look around. He's not trying to like see stuff. Mm-hmm. He's just like, I'm going to give you an estimate and be
just
done.
Very callous.
Like, which is callous.
But then in her bid for connection, you see it like break down. Yeah. This wall break down. Mm-hmm. And it just reminds me of Man in the Mirror. There's not really anything that you can do to change somebody, but sometimes what you do mm-hmm. can
change people.
Change people. Mm-hmm. Because you could see him like the wall coming down.
Right.
He like talked about his family, mm-hmm. how he felt about his father, and then he was like, oh, I can take a look at this sink. Like mm-hmm. it was a connection made.
Right.
Because she showed empathy to him when he did not to her.
Right.
And that caused a change. Right. She couldn't do anything about him, but she could change. She could affect that despite how he is, I'm still going to be a human, empathizing human with him, and that inspired some empathy on his part.
Right. I mean, great point, Whitney. It was, it's really about what you can do. And it's like, if you look at these things, like, I love that she decided to depict these stories out, because I also learned that in the, when she was in India, the, and the story about the Dalits, about how the job, the one was going into the sewer system and like putting your whole body into poop and waste and having to clean that, and that being your job, and it's not even money you get, it's just like spare food. It's so degrading and devaluing of human life.
Yeah.
That I, like, on another level that I haven't seen. That's, and unfortunately, this thing happens in India and some other countries too. But just this particular thing I saw, and I'm just like, why are they doing this to each other? I don't understand. But she actually got real Dalits that do that job to show it on screen. Like, she didn't make, like, them going to poop. She just made some stuff. Like, she built the thing because she didn't want to, she didn't want them to go in real poop. But they do that themselves. That's their real job. So she got the real people to do that. She just made, and the money that they got paid for just the day to show what kind of job they have to do is the more money they make in a year doing their work. When I heard her say that, I was like, that's disturbing.
And to say that, like, they do it with their bare hands and the only protection they have is oil. And each
not
other.
Even a suit or a cost, like, you can die from being exposed to that much feces and, like, waste. Like, this is disgusting. And forcing them to do that without any protective anything, come on. Like, this was, this is in the, this is like, I don't know when she went to India, but I'm pretty sure it was in the 2000s or early 2000s or something. So I'm like, come on, this is terrible, but it's still happening because those guys, that's their job, they still do it. And she shot this film, like, last year or so. Like, so I was just like, we have to look at what's going on in society. It's like, people don't want to pay attention, I understand. But it's all, it's going back to what you're saying about, what are you going to do to change something? What are you going to do? And I like that even those people, they are actually people that, they're activists for the Dalit plight in India. They're Dalits themselves, and that's the job they do, cleaning excrement with their hands and their bodies without protective gear. But they are actually activists because they were like, yeah, we want people to see this. We want people to know that this is still happening to us. That I mean, all the stats are in there. Like, the guy who was the professor, he's a real professor. He played himself in the film. And he explained all these things, and he's like, yeah, they're still fighting. Like, all the stats that he brought out about how the Dalit people are constantly attacked, raped, brutalized, and it's, like, on a bigger level than anyone else in India, you know? And it's just, like, you, it's all happening under their noses, and they don't care. And that was the callous part to me, too, that all these things were happening right in plain sight for everyone to witness, and it's like, we're not doing anything.
It's just interesting seeing all of these different stories across different cultures and divides
and time and cast, too,
and the connecting piece being cast. It was just really eye-opening because it's like, it's about power,
right?
Because especially like when he in India when he was talking about, they get like so much violence and rape committed against them, it's like that's about power. That's about showing that I have power over you, and you can never, like, I can do this, and there will probably be no consequences.
Exactly. And that was that terrible thing that I was like, it's really about power. Like, that's why you can't just say race. And I remember my sister, we were having a discussion, and she was like, sometimes she's always just like, oppress the whites. And I'm like, it's not always just about whites. White versus black. That's because that's what we're accustomed to here in America, which even Elizabeth, Isabel talks about how this is just our version of the caste system, that it's by color and stuff. But it's really not about skin color. It's about the power dynamics and the power and the things that people in power do to oppress others and not let them live in freedom. And it's like, that's the greater thing we have to pay attention to.
And then the system that causes you to, causes some of us to oppress others who are on the same level. Like the Trayvon Martin thing, he was Hispanic. It's like, you're not that much further up for black, but you still, because you have bought into the system.
Right, exactly. And that's the problem that people are having. That, and that's, and she actually, Ava DuVernay said that the main reason why she decided to go indie with the film, because she had backing before Netflix was going to do the film. They were going to produce it. She was going to have their money, but they were going to do it on their timetable. And she, I'm not going to lie to you, I have to admit, this particular election year is the most, like, nervous I've been, also like dissatisfied at the candidate selection, nervous about what's like, I'm so uncertain about what America's gonna be because of this election cycle. Like the choices we have are really ridiculous. And I'm just like, we gotta do, I can't believe America can't do better. But it's like, it's choosing not to do better. What's happening on the right side especially is even worse. That I'm like, all these things against this person, about against Trump, and you guys still feel, you're all caving to him. Like, everyone in your party is caving to him like he's Adolf Hitler or something. And he's fine with it. Like, you're fine with it. You're letting Americans actually suffer because of what he wants. You know what I mean? Like, it makes no sense. And so I'm nervous about the future of America, too, because even though I'm like, oh, yeah, not with somebody with all this stuff, can never be president, but look again. It's very much viable that he could be again, and I think America will be in a really worse place if that happens. And again, I'm not that keen on Biden as well, so it's just like, to me, I'm like, I feel kind of hopeless a little bit, because I'm just like, wow, we don't have any other leaders stepping up. We don't have any other choices. We have two bad choices. You know what I mean? And so she was looking at, because of the constant things that are happening, especially with rights being taken away, all this kind of stuff, it's kind of like, it's getting really Handmaid's Tale-ish, you know what I mean? And so it's like, she's like, she felt that we need to see the main thing. Like, we really need to look at this stuff. And that's why she felt compelled to, like, I'm going to produce this film myself and get it out there so people can see it before the election comes, so they can really understand, hey, it's not about white versus black here. We really need to see about this power dynamic, this power structure, this caste thing, and look at what we're doing in America before things get worse, you know? And so I was compelled by that reasoning. That's why I always looked into why people do stuff. And I was in awe that she decided to make this film herself. She made it in 37 days by herself. Well, not by herself, but the team, but not a big team. They didn't have the comforts of a big studio production. She used a lot of her own money. They didn't even have a good marketing. She even knew that she would not make money off this film, but it was like a passion project. She was like, she thought, I need to put this out for my country. I need to put this out for my people. And Anjanou, the actress, felt like the same way. She said that doing this film, she felt like she was in purpose in playing this character. And just explaining and, you know, being part of the process, she was like, I'm from Mississippi, where I know about these things, the intimidation of the Confederate flag. I've experienced things, what they're doing to completely wipe history from, you know, from the face of the earth. And I remember Isabel said in her interview that you can't just use ignorance as a blocker, as a shield, to be like, well, you know, ignorance is not going to save you from this kind of thing. It's everywhere. And at any moment, you can be turned into the one on the bottom of the cast. You just never know where the tides go, you know? But I mean, this film, I feel like, needs to be seen by everybody. I feel like it needs to be studied continually, and it needs to be, like, children need to see the scene. I loved hearing on the interviews that, well, people were paying for children to watch the film, for just teenagers, just young people. They were buying theaters out for screening because that's what she wanted. Ava DuVernay and that's what Isabel too, Ms. Wilkerson, they both wanted people to have these discussions, to see, to understand. And I really felt that in this. That's why I remember I said to you, I was like, I don't think I can rate the film because it just needs to be witnessed and seen.
It really is.
It's not about whether it was good or bad. It's just like, this is something that needs to be watched, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel like the rating would be so the weight of the message and everything that was in the film was like so much that I'm like, we can't just put a rating on it, like on something like this. It's too important to be like, oh, it was a 10 out of 10. Yeah, like, no, this just needs to be watched. You know what I mean?
It really is. It's an important film. And it really does just reach deep down into your soul.
Deep. Like, you have to sit. I had to take a minute. Like, I was bawling my eyes out, but I had to take a minute to let everything sink in and sit with the uncomfortableness and the bitterness that it caused in me, and like at those, just the, what people do to themselves, the evil. I even remember praying and asking God, like, God, how do you witness all this and still let the world, like, what kind of love do you have for us human beings? Like, we continually do this and you're watching it all the time. You know what I mean? And the world is still intact, you know? it's a very heavy, but it's just like, it also makes you think, turn inward too, to like, what can you do? Because at first I was like, this is too great of a issue. But you're right. It's about like looking at what individually you're going to do. Mm-hmm. How are you going to treat others? And I think that's really the main thing. Mm-hmm. Like you saw, even though all these people, all the examples in the movie, people that were in the caste system being treated terribly. Mm-hmm. But the examples were of people, they decided to rise up. The Dalit leader, he rose up despite the cruelty he faced. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, just showing his life story about how, because he was a Dalit, he wasn't even allowed to sit in a chair and at school, like, and learn with the other kids. He wasn't allowed to drink water. They wouldn't even pour the water. Like, they would just pour the water, like, on him. And I'm like, what the hell is the kid? Give him something to drink. Like, it's so evil what was done for him. But he grew out of that. He was smart. He came to studying in London and Columbia. You know, and come on, Ivy League schools. Mm-hmm. And he went back to try and change his country. I mean, the two couples, though they witnessed the book burning in Germany and then the trouble that they had to be part of in the South, but they still fought and persevered and wrote this book that... Mm-hmm. led the way for some civil rights stuff to happen. Once you're exposed to the issue, you can confront it and then you could deal with it. And I think that's what America needs to do, like, now too. This is an issue the world needs to do. This is the issue we have. Let your eyes be open to it. Confront it now, you know, otherwise you're not going to overcome it. You're going to keep repeating the same trauma cycles. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah.
Which is interesting. It makes me think about the, in the museum she was at in Germany.
Right.
And it said, this happened before, therefore it can happen again.
Yes. Right, Whitney. Right. Right. And then, so this movie had so many historical facts in it that I was like, I didn't even know that, not Trump, ew. I didn't even know that Dr. King went to India. Like, I did not know anything about that.
Did not know that either.
And that he wrote about his time there in Ebony magazine during that time. And I was like, I need to go look that up. And then I did not know that in deciding what to do, legislation for how to keep the Jews in line, these Germans studied what was happening in America.
That
they learned it from America for how to treat the Jews in Nazi Germany.
That is crazy.
It's disgusting. And that was wild to me. I was like, wow. They used us as a case study because we were doing it the best, I guess. I don't know. Like, I mean, it was so many things were in this film that, and even feeling for Isabel too. I still felt the weight of the grief that she did, but her perseverance to put this out here to, you know, be that kind of the director or the conduit of which everyone received this information, that she kind of abandoned the grief at times, because I know it came up, but at times, and she dove in. Mm-hmm. I really think it saved her, to be honest with you, from just collapsing under the weight of that kind of grief. Mm. But like having this drive, having this mission, almost like this purpose to write these stories, it's amazing. And I really tip my hats to her. I really am going to get the book now and actually read it and just read more of what she had to say.
Yeah.
To think more about the issue, you know. And I think it's timely for this month, this time period.
Right.
It's really good. I feel like everybody needs to watch the film.
I agree.
Origin was fantastic. Blew me away. And I'm in awe of the film. And it really touched my heart, y'all.
It is. It is amazingly told story.
I have to give it to Ava DuVernay. I mean, I'm actually, after watching this, I was actually upset that this was not considered for an Oscar at all. Like, they completely snubbed this film in all the major awards season. And I was like, this makes no sense.
What's the timeline for the awards season?
The film came out earlier. The film came out last year, actually.
Oh.
The original, yeah, it was in time for all the awards season.
Okay.
They just decided to snub it. Okay. But I was like, the fact that this is not at least in a contention for best film just goes to show you, you know, the issues, like, nobody wants to pay attention to this. But she's like, no, I'm going to force you guys to pay attention and watch this. Mm-hmm. It needs to be there because it needs to be said. It needs to be said for everyone. Mm-hmm. But I really was like, I'm really surprised. And not even, like, best written story, nothing. There are no nominations or Oscars. The film deserves an Oscar for real. I don't know what is out there, but, you know, It really does. I hope that the film goes beyond and people understand and we can do some work, you know, people as a people, as leaders of the world. Like, I pray that people watch it, and because it's really about all humanity story. So, yeah, but Origin really got me going, y'all. So I really like the film. Again, I'm not going to rate it because I also think it's excellent and y'all just need to see it.
Yeah, it's something to be seen. Check it out, you guys.
Yeah.
Any more words about the film? It might be hard for you guys to check out because
I don't think it's a hard watch.
No, I mean, as far as to see it in theaters, because it, when we thought it was coming out wide, we couldn't find it really in any theaters near us.
Yeah.
And we did see it, you know, we watched it recently, obviously, which is why we're doing a review. But it kind of feels like it's it feels like it's going back out of theaters.
I think as more people watch it and they see the impact of it, I think that's what's happening, because the original date that I saw that the film was coming out was January 19th, which is why I was like, oh, so this film is a 2024 film. But and then I saw that it was earlier.
I remember looking it up because Bella was like, we should do this. And I'm like, I don't see it anywhere. I mean, I saw it on that day, which was like a Wednesday. It had like two showings, but then it had nothing else.
You're right. And it wasn't anywhere. And I remember being so sad. And I was like, oh, wow, where is the film? And then I was mad because I was like, why isn't this film everywhere? And then I thought we couldn't watch it. But then you finally told me that it was expanding. Because I was like, it's January 19th. It should be out. But it wasn't out everywhere. But I think now that as people are watching it and more people are seeing the impact, and it's spreading and it's getting other places. I remember I heard in the interview that even Ingenue actually took time, instead of going to the award show or whatever, she was actually standing outside on Hollywood Boulevard and passing out flyers for people to see the movie. Because she knew that they didn't have marketing or everything, but the movie was too important to her to not do that. She's like, I don't care about award shows. This film needs to be seen. So she was handing it out by herself. Here's the actor, the main actor of the film, doing that. That's how much she believed in the project. And I was like, wow. Yeah. And I could see why she would do that. And then, you know, it's kind of messed up. But I'm glad that there was still a vehicle for her to put this film out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not in the film industry. I don't know all the secrets and the behind the things and all that stuff. But I'm still glad that she's able to.
It might be a little difficult to find in theaters. So, but if you can, definitely check it out.
Right.
If not, hopefully, you know, on social media or something, when it comes to something streaming we'll put something out to let you guys know. But it's something to be watched, to be experienced.
Highly recommend
it, you guys.
All right, guys. So that is our review. Any other last points? Any other things you wanted to say? I just want to say that all the actors did a phenomenal job. Even John Bernthal, who wasn't in there for long, he was still impactful. His presence really was in there. Everybody did a great job, to be honest with you. I really enjoyed the film. I really want to watch it again. I just really liked it.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. All right. But that's our review of Origin, guys. So again, y'all, I hope you had a wonderful, wonderful Valentine's Day, and continue to watch this. I mean, if you want something new for Black History Month, go ahead, watch this too. You know what I mean? We'll come back at you with some more things we're doing later on. And as always, continue to blurt out, everybody.
Blurt us out.
Bye. Thanks for listening to our podcast. Please subscribe to our show on whatever podcast listening app you use and share the show with other blurred and non-blurred family and friends. And if you like this episode, please subscribe to our email newsletter at blurredtalkbw.ck.page and also rate and review our show on Apple Podcasts.
Intro and outro music is Twilight by Caption. You can find them on SoundCloud, username Caption spelled CAPSHUN. Show notes by Ola Hansen, audio engineering by Whitney Booker.
And don't forget to get social, you guys. You can email us at blurredtalkbw@gmail.com. And our social media handles on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok is at blurredtalkbw. And our YouTube channel is youtube.com/@blurredtalkbw. And we've got our individual things going on too. You can find the Triple F Queen on Instagram at Triple F Queen B as in boy. And my YouTube channel is youtube.com/@TripleFQueenB.
And you can find me, Whitney, at Luminabi Studios, my company. And the email address is wit@luminabi.com, spelled WHIT@LUMENAVI.COM. And you can also find me on Twitter at Luminabi Studios.